We have a witness go on record saying that they saw you in the White House parking lot with Mr. Egan, Ms. Bruckheimer, and Senator Pierce.
That's correct. I ran into them by chance because I was merely getting something from my car.
What were you getting?
I was getting some medicine.
What kind of medicine?
It's knee medicine.
Knee medicine?
Yeah, knee medicine. I have problems with my left knee. It hurts when I crouch.
What was the name of the medicine?
I want to say it's called crouch cream, but that's not right. It's a white tube with a red label. I'm sure an intern could research this. It has a silhouette of a horse on it, and I don't know why the horse is on there. I guess horses probably have good knees. So, but I think it's called Knee-Z cream. I don't think that's it.
TBTM!
He hates these cans! Stay away from the cans!
This is genius. This is genius work.
Just because you like laying around your house in your underpants doesn't mean the United States of America has to see it.
Is there, and I'm just guessing here, some kind of medication that you maybe need a lot of and have taken none of, or maybe too much of today?
I stand corrected. This is compelling radio.
All right, here we go, everybody. It's time to start this whole machinery up again for the week. It's a Monday morning edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
I can't believe you're still on the air.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host. Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City.
I won't trash talk. I won't be out there blowharding.
That's my commitment to you here on this Monday morning as the sun rises over Lake Whatcom and Squalicum Mountain. I was out. I wasn't on that mountain, but I was on one very close to it with the pod dog yesterday.
I'll say, what's up, dog?
I took a hike up something called the Chanterelle Trail to this beautiful overlook. It was a few miles up, and we got there to have some lunch, and then there were so many people and dogs at the top of this remote location that we had to go find a different remote location to sit and have our lunch away from the maddening crowds, because that's how being in nature apparently works in 2019. I guess we can just be thankful that it was actually open for now. Let's see here. It's episode 2824 in a collector series. We have
Let the fun begin.
Lots and lots to talk about in the news, and also news from our lives and from our weekend. News today that Howard Schultz, the guy from Starbucks, is probably going to run for president.
This song goes out to all the coffee lovers of the world.
He's a very successful business person, and usually that sort of endears you to the local community where you did your thing. And of course, Starbucks started in Seattle, and yet everybody I know from Seattle, at least the people I know on social media, are very much opposed to Howard Schultz becoming president over one thing, and that is what happened to our professional basketball team when he was the owner of it. Is that a dumb reason to not vote for somebody for president if you otherwise align with their politics? We'll talk about that. Also, in Maryland, they set up one of those traffic cameras that takes a picture of your car and sends you a ticket, but they hid it behind a porta potty.
Boo! Boo!
They're trying to say that's just where they put the camera, but like, come on, you guys. We'll talk about what is and isn't dirty pool when it comes to traffic enforcement. I started laughing because I had another memory of yesterday going to this hike with the dog. And it was, I don't want to be gross here at the top of the show. I apologize. I know there was a lot of that last week. I'm trying to move past that real scatological bent that this show can get onto sometimes. But there was it's a state park or something. And so there's a porta potty, but it's not, hooked up to plumbing. It's kind of an outhouse type of deal. And I had the dog with me. She was on the leash. I didn't want to tie her up outside the outhouse. I needed to just run in there and pee real bad. We went in, and it was quite fragrant in there. Just a real unpleasant situation. And I had the thought, like, I mean, for a dog, if you think about it, that's probably, believe it or not, that's probably heavenly. Like, I don't think that they have the same parameters for what smells good and bad to them. But I will tell you this, right after I peed and I opened that door again, that dog bolted out of there. Like, if you have an outhouse, Washington State Parks Department, that a dog doesn't want to be in, you might need to clean it out. Okay, that's my that's my important public service announcement here at the top of episode 2824 in a collector series. Now, let us announce this guy, the longest running Cobro of the show, known for his drawing of tall ships, their grace, and their splendor. He never misses the sausage fest. He's a soulful rocker from New Hampshire. Also, in my eyes, he is to me an innocent champion of honesty. He's Andrew Walsh, and he joins me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. Happy Monday. The adventure begins again.
It certainly does. It feels like it... I'm just going to, like, record and distribute a conversation as entertainment that many people will just be having in their real life today when they go to work, which is, it feels like the weekend went by really fast to me. And I don't know why that is.
What was your theory the other... I think we had this conversation last Monday, but you had a theory that either your weekend goes fast if you pack it, or your weekend goes fast if you
I think
don't
my
do
theory,
much.
Which I'm now... Which I no longer believe in. It took me only 1 week to distance myself from this theory. My theory was maybe if you do a lot during the weekend, like I had gone out to a local island, Lopez Island, last weekend with the dog, and kind of felt like I was maximizing my weekend, and somehow it felt like that meant there was more weekend, as opposed to those weekends where you just get on the couch and you watch a bunch of, real world Road Rules Gauntlet Challenge or something. So my theory was doing more on the weekend maybe makes it feel like there is, in fact, more weekend. But I kind of did a fair amount this weekend, and it just went by in the blink of an eye, and here we are. It's Monday morning, and as you said, the adventure begins again. I did something on Friday that I want to tell you about. We got done with the show. I had some other stuff to sort of handle. I did an interview that'll be playing in a couple weeks when you're going to be in Hawaii and I will be doing the show solo for a week. And I'm recording a series of interviews. I recorded one with a fella named Chioki Iander, who's the voice of NPR stuff. Like when you turn on NPR podcast or listen to NPR, you pretty much hear him saying, you know, support for this show comes from wherever. We hooked up and talked on Friday afternoon. That's going to be a fun interview. Look forward to people hearing that. But we were talking about movies, and it kind of got me thinking, huh, I wonder if there are any movies out there I want to see. And so as soon as that interview was done, I checked, and I realized I had already seen at the Art House Theater here in Bellingham, the Pickford, which I love. I'd already seen the movies there that I wanted to see, which was basically The Favorite. Have you seen The Favorite?
I have not. I really want to. I was wondering if you were going to talk about that. Genevieve went to see it yesterday, and I wasn't able to go with her, but I'm very much looking forward to it. You already saw it?
I did see it. I saw it, I think, kind of maybe during our break or something. Uh-huh. It is really good. Like,
yeah, looks great,
really, really good. And if you saw the trailer and you thought, like, I'm not really into period pieces, like, go to that movie, please. The Favorite. It's really good. But I had already seen it, and I didn't find the other movies particularly interesting that were showing there. So I was like, I don't know. Is there anything at the, like, whatever it's called, Regal AMC IMAX Plex or something? There's a movie theater that I can see from my house. I don't really know the name of it. I just will Google movies near me and then go through the list. It's some kind of massive theater chain. Anyway, I go down there, or I should say I look at it on the website, and the only movie they're playing that looks appealing to me is Into the Spider-Verse, like the Spider-Man cartoon.
Which everybody says is amazing, And it seems so far out of anything I'd usually watch, but I am so tempted to watch that damn movie. Everybody says it's great. But I can't tell if they're just parents.
I went to that movie theater on Friday afternoon, and I spoke words I never thought I would ever say out loud, which was, one adult for Spider-Man.
Oh, that's what you saw. Oh, great. Oh, yeah. So you did it.
I did it. I took the plunge. I went and saw a cartoon about Spider-Man by myself. And Andrew, that movie is as advertised. I am still buzzing from the experience of seeing that movie. It was – I just want to say, like, it was more than a movie to me. It was like a, I don't know, hour and a half piece of visual art. The animation is almost like doing it a disservice, although I guess that's technically what you'd call what was happening. But they played with the form, the visual form of what a movie can be in such – like the I just was – my mouth was open the whole film going like, I can't believe what I'm watching right now. I cannot believe. I mean, also the movie was, you know, well made. The characters were pretty well developed, and Dr. Octagon did look exactly like Sarah Koenig from Serial, which I thought was maybe kind of a – I don't know, that was a shot at public radio. But other than that, no, I thought the characters were good. The plot was great. But I just – the animation was unreal.
You know what I'm thinking about, and this is a strange place for me to take this because – you're talking about a movie that I haven't seen. I'm going to compare it to a movie experience that you haven't seen.
Can but we not bring up the Magic Christian for one episode of this show, please?
I'm not going to bring up the Magic Christian. I'm just saying there is this movie that I watch in college. It's about a guy who's got a lot of money. I don't know what religion he is, but he likes to play pranks with his money. Are you with me? It stars Ringo Starr. No, I was going to say, I don't know much about why this movie is so buzzy. I just know that everybody independently says, like, you got to see this. Don't think of it as a cartoon. It's amazing. And that's kind of all I know. And then what you've just told me. And you saying, boy, it's almost like it's redefined what a movie means. I can't help but to think about the mindset of Bandersnatch, the choose-your-own-adventure movie that we were talking about last week that I gave a spun because, you know, this is something that also conceivably was supposed to change the way we think about movies. But I feel like Bandersnatch was so obsessed with the idea that it's changing the way we think about movies that it was just, you know, the story and everything became just totally lost in the medium. But it sounds like what you were watching was just like maybe more what they are trying to do.
Yeah, it's a very interesting idea because, and I'm not giving anything away, it's the idea is that there's like a multiverse of Spider-Men and spider people. They're not all male. And through, you know, what's happening on like planet Earth, I guess you would say, or at least our, what we think of as our verse, the bad guy in the movie creates some kind of machine that can, he's trying to bring his family back. And what he ends up doing is kind of doing some weird thing with the space-time continuum, as we say. And you get like Spider-Man from all these different dimensions, all in our dimension, trying to get back to their dimension and trying to defeat the bad guy, and also Dr. Octagon. And it's pretty great because there's a spider person who is who's a young woman, and she is kind of like, I don't know how you describe her aesthetic or her vibe, but she's just like a very super cool spider person. Then there is, in like an anime, Spider Woman. So in her dimension, Spider Man or Spider Woman is like anime and lives inside a robot, but the animation is exactly like an anime film. Mm-hmm. Then you have like a noir Spider Man that's voiced by Nicolas Cage that's in black and white and is deeply confused by a Rubik's Cube in the movie because it's in color. Then you have like a comical Spider-Man that's called Spider-Ham that's voiced by John Mulaney that's just like has like oversized mallet and is like that kind of, but they're all actual spider people, Spider-Men's, and so they all converge on our universe and they're doing their thing, but it's just like, it's really playing with the idea of the superhero film. It's really playing with, I don't know, just a whole bunch of different things. And the visual, I kept thinking, this is also going to sound like a weird, like it's almost a criticism of the movie. But for a little bit, I was like, is this a 3D movie that I didn't get the glasses for?
Hmm.
Because they do this really interesting thing where they almost make the backgrounds blurry a lot of the time in such a way that it's almost like pixelated or looks like oh, if I had on 3D glasses, that would all be something. But I kept looking around, and no one else was in 3D glasses, so that was just clearly an aesthetic decision they'd made. But they give it
a depth of field, it sounds like, to make it seem more realistic.
You just have to see it. Like, I'm not good at explaining these things, and I'm sure I'm using the wrong terminology to describe it, but it was just from the word go, visually one of the most interesting movies I've ever seen in my life. And it was also just damned entertaining. And my other thought was, like, all superhero movies just need to be animated now. Because what happens is, and I am by no means the expert on these types of films, but part of what is a turnoff to me about the live action ones is that they are cartoonish. But they are in that, as you often say, the uncanny valley, where they're like a cartoon, but they're not supposed to be. They're supposed to be humans doing things, but there's so much CGI, and they might as well just go all the way and become a cartoon. Because what was funny was, as with it being a cartoon, I was totally into it. I was there for it, as they say now on internet. I'm here for this animated fight that goes on for 12 minutes, whereas when it's computer generated, I'm very bored by those like epically long fights that happen in most superhero movies now. I was just like, oh, this has been my problem with superhero movies, is that they're not animated. I will see every one of these Spider-Man movies that come out if they're in this format. I mean, it was just remarkable.
Where does Roger Rabbit fit into all of this? You're not banning the animation plus live action crossovers entirely, are you?
If Bob Hoskins is still available, is he alive? I will accept it. Actually, you know what? It's interesting, Andrew. There were a couple moments. We probably have listeners that are way more in the world of this film than I am, so maybe they know the answer to this. I swear there were a couple of scenes where, apropos, or at least for no discernible reason, it was almost like they blended in the tiniest bit of live action in the background, but like didn't comment on it. It wasn't a plot point. It wasn't like a human, a flesh and blood human has popped into the cartoon world. It was just like, it was so visually just creative that I was like, oh, are they, some of the things looked so realistic. It looked like, oh, that's just film. Like, you're just putting like a hint layer of film underneath this animation just to make it visually creative. And it was working for me. It was just great throughout.
I'll try to see it while it's still in the theaters then, because that's one.
Yes.
I remember saying to Veeves, I'm like, everybody is talking about this one, but Veeves and I have a little bit of a, like, people our age, actually people much younger than us now, have younger children, and so they'll say, oh, you got to see fill-in-the-blank animated movie or whatever. They're like, no, trust me, it's not just for kids, you'll love it too. And it's like, yeah, but you're still watching it because you have kids. You're in that world. Like, there's a genre of movies that are really, really good if you're parents. But if you don't have kids, you really don't have to go in that world, because there are plenty of other movies that aren't aimed at kids, but parents will enjoy it too. And so when I mentioned this to Veeves, I think that she put it in that category. She's like, we don't have to watch that. We don't have kids. And I was just like, I think it's better than that. But I hadn't. But again, I was only getting little bits and pieces, and I hadn't read any reviews. So, and you would be just as skeptical as us, I mean, if not more so, of something like this.
Oh my
so
god, I was like, I the whole time I was driving there, I was like, am I really doing this? Am I going to this movie theater to buy a ticket by myself to see a Spider-Man cartoon? Like, is this happening? And yes, it was happening. And I don't want to. Part of what was probably great for me was I had heard from a few people, and really actually maybe even seen on Twitter, people going, hey, this movie is really good. So that was my level of expectation, was, oh, I've heard this is good, but who knows? Now I've made this really strong case for it. So I may have set your expectations a little bit too high. I just say that, like, as a person who never goes to these kinds of films, I've literally never seen a Spider-Man-related movie in a theater, nor would I typically, this was a really enjoyable experience. So I would recommend it to people who are like me and not really into that scene.
I'm looking forward to it. I know that we need to.
But do
to
see
break,
it in the theater, by
yeah.
the way.
Yeah, yeah, please. No, that's do. What it sounds like. And also because if I'm watching it at home, like, I just don't. I need to. I just am pretty bad at paying attention to movies at home. You know what I mean? Especially anything that's like kind of intricate that is supposed to really hold my attention. I did watch one of the Fire Festival documentaries yesterday, by the way.
Oh, you did?
Burn through any of those? Yeah. It seems like you might.
It's so funny because those are – we were really – we talked a lot about Fire Festival on this show, and I love documentaries. And so a documentary about the Fire Festival, I think we even promoted talking about it on the show because of the kind of rivalry between Hulu and Netflix. Mm-hmm. I can't explain it, but there is just some kind of force field around those movies that make me not want to watch them. And I don't know if it's because one of them paid the guy who was the co, you know, or maybe the primary conspirator on this, like paid him some amount of money to be in it. Or maybe it's because I don't really feel bad for the millennials who got burned because they were trying to go hang out with Kylie Jenner. I don't know. There's something about it. I get a bad feeling just thinking about the whole thing, Even though I was obsessed with the notion of Fire Festival.
I will say, probably follow your instincts on there. Like, I'm fine that I watched it. you know, it's whatever. Once every 10 years, I should watch something that is almost culturally relevant. I got to say, at first, it really did give me a bad feeling because it's like produced like a traditional documentary where you have, you know, people talking to the camera, like the talking heads, only they were somehow involved. But the thing is, they're all like talking in this way that is documentary style, but they're all dislikable. I mean, by the end, you start to maybe find some people who you don't totally hate, or some people maybe come around a little bit, but it's just amazing to like watch this documentary style thing. Only everybody, it seems like a parody. This was my biggest takeaway from it. So the main organizer's name was Billy McFarland, and everybody talks about how, you know, this festival was his venture, which was part of, it was supposed to be just a promotion for this other venture that he had, which was on the heels of some other venture. And everybody keeps talking about him like Billy can just talk you into anything. I mean, he comes into a room with his charm and charisma, and he's amazing. And he isn't interviewed in the Netflix version, which is what I watched. But it feels like watching a Bob and Dave skit where the joke is everybody is talking about a guy who has tons of charisma. And then every time he walks into a scene, he just seems like the most awkward, uncharismatic guy in the world. Like, I honestly thought I was being trolled the whole time, or that there was going to be a joke at the end. Like, just kidding, he doesn't exist. Because everybody, he's just like, you can't, I mean, hang on to your wallet when Billy McFarland comes in the room. And then, like, Billy's kind of like awkwardly like squinting and trying to look kind of cool next to Ja Rule, but just looks just deeply uncomfortable even in the most party-esque of scenes. It is so hilarious if you just pretend you're watching Stella.
Well, I mean, wasn't that one made by Chris Smith, the guy who made American Movie?
Oh, is that true? I don't know really I didn't read any of the kind of background comparison. I knew that Hulu did one and Amazon did one, and I just randomly put one on.
Yeah, I think that the story that I heard or that I read was that the smooth talker himself, the smooth talker in chief, Billy McFarland, basically was trying to leverage these two documentaries off of each other to get paid money, which was allegedly for the licensing of some footage he had. But he went to one of them and said, I need $250,000. And that was apparently the one that you watched. It was directed, I think, by a guy named Chris Smith, who directed American Movie, one of my favorite documentaries of all time, which did kind of make me think maybe it's good. But I just for me, the problem is I have – instinctively and inherently a hard time feeling that bad for somebody who thought that this sounded like a good thing. In other words, if this appealed to you, and everybody gets to like what they like, but it's like, it's not to me, it's not the story of people living in Puerto Rico who have their lives destroyed by a natural disaster or something. It's like the story of people who maybe they, you know, used their college money to do this, but like, what was wrong with you that you wanted to do this? Like, there was one guy, and I don't even know if he's real or not. Maybe he's just a fake, you know, creation of the internet. But I saw something on like Instagram of this one guy who supposedly like won tickets to Fire Festival and was just like, he won them at his work, and he just went, and he basically was having a fine time because he thought it was funny to see all of these entitled, very beautiful people just suffering. you know, not really suffering, like not being in any real danger, but just being uncomfortable for a weekend. And they were like, finally, a hero emerges from the Fyre Festival docks. Now, I don't know if that guy was real or not. Is that a person that's in the movie?
Yeah, I can't remember because it wasn't a Blink 182 who was playing, and I think that's who he was most interested in. He was just kind of a very normal, I almost said normcore, but just like a normal kind of guy who has a very normal job. I think maybe in the tech sector or something like that. I'm not highly recommending this. I didn't realize that this was Chris Smith. Is that his name, Chris Smith? The director.
Yeah.
I should have known because there's a scene where they're like, it's the first line of the film. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, echoes of American movie.
It's the first line of the film. It's got to be on the money here.
There's a the only like real like legit victims are the people who were living on this island and working on this island and promised all this money. But even that, like, they definitely work them in, and there's a significant I guess there's an amount of time dedicated to that, and there's a significant, I would say, interview at the end that really underscores that in an emotional way. But even that, I don't know. The whole thing, it was fine. Again, I'm glad I saw it just so that I have seen it. But, like, if you're kind of on the edge, like, of wanting to watch it, I don't think you're going to find it entertaining necessarily. You're going to find everybody pretty despicable and unlikable. And, like, there's this one guy who talks to the camera like he's just been dying to be interviewed his whole life. Like, a lot of people who are really into the ideas of themselves, which, you know, I don't have a great gag reflex on.
Well, right. Well, not to overly generalize to a movie I didn't see. Or two movies I didn't see. But if I would imagine that somebody who found the Fyre Festival a very appealing idea because there was influencers there themselves dream of being an influencer. And so now you point the camera at those people and you have a recipe for my living nightmare, which, you know, is the same reason that I don't watch a lot of the reality TV shows. And I'm not trying to act high minded because I watch plenty of trash television. But people who have been waiting their whole life to try to wedge their way on camera because usually of their sort of physical attractiveness or whatever. Those kind of people, I get boring really fast. On the other hand, I'm working on a TV story this week that everybody should watch on Sunday about Waffle House. I realize saying that. I'm like somebody who's been trying to weasel their way onto TV my entire life. And I'm not even good to look at. So really, what am I offering the viewers?
I mean, the fact that you did wear a bikini while you were making those hash browns, I thought was a bold choice. And certainly something
dangerous, I learned. You do not want to fry bacon without a shirt on.
Where do you put the jelly on the plate if you wanted to say, I need my coworker to get dressed?
Did I actually send you that breakdown of all of the what's called the marking at Waffle House?
Mm-mm.
It might be proprietary. I don't think we can use it for the show pick, but I'll send this to you during the break. It is nuts. Like, it's just like a photograph of all of the different where you put stuff on a plate at Waffle House if you work there to let the griddle staff know what they're supposed to be making. It's pretty crazy. So let's take a quick break here. Then when we come back, we got top stories, we got some donors of the day to thank, and other stuff, I'm sure. Don't go anywhere. It's TBTL.
Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone. Suzanne, the plans we made put an end to you. I walked out on the morning, and I wrote down this song.
Just like a live version of this?
Yeah, it is. Spotify won't play it. Without explanation, Spotify just won't play the album version, so I went to YouTube.
Oh, you must not have maybe they don't have the rights. I want to hear the Ja Rule cover of this song.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, this is. Wait, when does James Taylor say "Put It On Me"?
I will 100% tear up if this song comes on at the right or maybe wrong moment in my life.
Ugh. I was actually even thinking now, like, is this what we should be bumping in with? I mean, it was my idea, but I was like, man, this is so sad for a Monday morning.
I don't know. I love, like, I had a real James Taylor phase in high school And I really like James Taylor and Paul Simon. I don't know why I wasn't killing it socially with that kind of awesome musical taste in about 11th grade. Soon-to-be teen father and local James Taylor enthusiast Luke Burbank wonders why he's not getting more attention from the ladies.
You're like, what do dads do? Well, get the James Taylor.
But man, I love like James. That James Taylor's another one, by the way, where maybe this is a difference between you and I. Although I can't speak for exactly how you were in high school, but like I had James Taylor's greatest hits, and I loved it. And I wonder if you would have maybe been more inclined to find like the song that Fire and Rain was off of, and if you were to like James Taylor, and then actually like and then research that or get into that. Like I feel a certain amount of embarrassment that a lot of my favorite music from high school is just greatest hits albums, you know? Like that feels a little dilettante-ish, a little cheesy of me.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying this for you to buy into that notion, because I was an idiot in my own way. But yeah, I had a bias against greatest hits. I had a few greatest hits. Like most of all of my Rolling Stones knowledge came from a couple of double albums that were both essentially greatest hits, called Hot Rocks and Hot Rocks too, Big Hits and Phased Cookies. I think.
Yeah.
I still don't know what that means.
The cover of Hot Rocks looks exactly like Donald Trump's actual hair.
Yeah, right. You know it. Sure.
Upsettingly so.
Yeah. I'd never liked that album cover. But anyway, but I did have this weird thing about, trying to get to the albums and wanting to explore the albums. But also, this was kind of, this is pre-internet and everything. So I would also mostly rely on my friends. And by putting an S on the end of friends, I'm really giving myself too much credit. Usually my friend to like kind of be my Sherpa in these matters. And so in my own way, I was really stuck in my own rut too, which was only listening to things that Tony told me to listen to.
I'll hear a song on, Spotify or Pandora, and I'll get really into it. And then I'll go to the source material sometimes, because I am trying, same thing. I'll be like, oh, this is a great song. I love this. And I'm hoping to gosh that the whole album sounds kind of like that, but then it often doesn't. And I'm like, oh, that was the one good song. That's why that the algorithm elected that to be played on my stereo right now. I just sent you, speaking of
No Rain comes to mind. Remember the song No Rain?
Who did
No Rain?
Blind Melon.
Blind Melon. Yes, I remember being like, oh my God, I loved that song. And I didn't usually like songs that were, hits on the radio all that much, again, just because I was an idiot. And it took 20 years for me to look back at the 90s and be like, oh, all those things that were on the radio, a lot of them I love now. But Blind Melon, No Rain, loved that song, thought it was great, got the tape at the record exchange and listened to the whole thing and was like, what the hell?
What's the rest of it sound like?
White boy funk. It's all white boy hippie funk.
I'm trying to just leave that in the open if I can for our friend Lin Pham to pull that.
I haven't listened to that record since I was appalled by it in like 1998 or whenever it came out. So maybe I'm wrong about that. But at the time, all I can tell you is 19-year-old Andy or however old I was very put off by that album. Maybe younger. Was I 16? Who knows?
Little Shannon Hoon, I believe, was the R.I.P. lead singer of that band.
That's sad.
If you like that sound, there's a band called Willows. They're from like, I don't know, 10 years ago. They kind of have that same, like a lead singer kind of has a high voice, but it's not white boy funk at all. It's much more out there.
Oh, okay, good.
Hipster indie. Yeah, Willows. Check them out maybe. Did you see this thing that I emailed you during the break, this more elaborate, more detailed breakdown of the marking of foods at Waffle House?
Yes, and I gotta say, and I know this does not work for our listeners at all because they're not looking at it, but the plate to represent Texas cheesesteak melt, I think what's on that plate is actually what they served at the Fire Festival, just to make everything come around. It's a piece of white bread with with two pieces of Kraft cheese and a packet of ketchup on top of it. And that means that when you put that on the plate, then you hand it to the kitchen, and then they know to turn that stuff into a Texas cheese steak melt, right?
Yeah, that one's fairly literal. Like, I think you could kind of guess at that one if you had to. But everything else is just, to me, it was just so, would be so not intuitive. Like, there's a way. Basically, there's just like a way to orient. Either it's a container of jelly, like Welch's jelly. Where that is on the plate, I know we talked about this the other day, but where that is on the plate tells you how cooked the egg is supposed to be or how it's supposed to be cooked. And then there's a whole thing with it indicating what kind of toast you're going to get, if it's wheat or white. There's something involving mayo packets for how well something's going to be scrambled. There's something with the syrup containers for if it's a single or double waffle, or if it's pecan, it's flipped over in a certain way. There's just all of this kind of language, visual language that I just would never instinctively. When I was trying to do this, I remember somebody handed me a plate, or there was a plate that had a mayo flipped over, and they were like, "Well, that means chicken," and I was like, "Well, of course it does."
It's right.
Got a flipped over mayo container. How would I not know that means chicken?
The flipped over anyway. Stuff doesn't bug me. I mean, I love the system. I love the idea of it. The thing that's making me uncomfortable, like if I'm putting myself in this position, is how do you keep them from sliding around? One thing I want to note is when you were describing it the other day, I was picturing round plates. But of course, Waffle House has oval shaped plates, which helps a little bit. So you can tell what is, 12 o'clock and what is 9 o'clock, etc. But like if you're quickly moving plates around, you have a little jelly canister and you got it up at 12 o'clock and then you hand it. How do you know that that's not sliding over into the 3 o'clock?
It's one of these subtle little systems where I think you put the plate down first. And once the plate is placed where it's going to go, it doesn't move a lot until the person who's cooking looks at it. And they look. So you put the plate down in the order that it's in. You put the stuff on it. And then the next thing that happens is the person cooking looks over. They take in all the visual information. They now know the system. They now know what's going on there. And then they grab the plate. And somehow their brain remembers this stuff. And this goes to a point that we've talked about many times on the show. There are abilities and skills that are demonstrated by people in jobs all the time, in jobs that do not get paid huge amounts of money, that just absolutely floor me. As if I needed to tell people this, but the world is not fair, because I promise you that being a $1 million griddle person at Waffle House, which is if you've cooked $1 million worth of Waffle House food, which takes a while, let me just tell you, doing that job and understand it, like keeping it all straight in your head, I know that is harder than what many of the CEOs in America are doing. I'm not even saying that to be hyperbolic. I legitimately know it to be the case. Like, it is harder.
Would you say it's harder than what I do? I mean, you wouldn't go that far.
I would say it's harder than the talking on the show and about at the level of the compression and other audio systems and VPNing that you do. You do some elegant and specific things to the show after it's done that are impressive to me, that are right up there with working the line at Waffle House. Nothing I do is comparable. That's for damn sure.
Oh, yeah. No, I was saying that as a complete – I mean, obviously, nothing I do is as hard as this thing. I would do this for 1 hour, and then I'd be like, so is it nap time yet? When do I get to talk to Luke about this?
That's the thing. You would love it. And when we talked about this a couple weeks ago, I was saying I think you would really dig the mise en place, the kind of setup around everything, because it's all very it only works because there's a system in place for everything. And what I think is also great – is that just at the end of all of it, too, for all of these super elaborate little systems and visual cues, there's a certain one. I can't remember even what it is, but it's like a knife at a certain angle on the plate just means come talk to me. Like, it means we have a situation that I cannot even describe through any of the existing semaphore of this world called Waffle House. Like, just come find me.
That's like the radio equivalent of like, that's like, come talk to the manager. That was your last waffle. You just made your last waffle.
After shift. Yeah, exactly. Why don't we, because this is about the time when this usually happens, why don't we take a moment to thank some donors of the day. Thank you, baby. I mean, I know my job isn't hard, but sometimes, Andrew, sometimes, I'll be honest, I do crush it at this job. And one of those moments happened last night when I was putting the show sheet together today, and I saw the first donor of the day I was going to thank was Heather Kenyon of Chicago, Illinois. But for some reason having to do with typos or our funky system, Heather was listed as Gether as in G-E-A-T-H-E-R. And I looked at it and I was like, there's no Gether Kenyon. I know there's a Heather Kenyon because I've seen that name before. In fact, maybe even in previous years. And just on the fly, Andrew, without consulting you or Mike Ressler or anybody else, I just said, I'm changing that G to an H. And that, my friend, is why I get paid the medium bucks.
Hold on a second, though. Did you...
am I wrong?
Oh, no, I see. Okay, did you Google it? For a second, I thought Google was telling me it is Gether, but that's wrong.
Did you Google it by any chance?
You just know from your institutional memory.
From years of working the line on this show, I just look at it, visual recognition, and I'm like, that's not that person's name. This person's name is Heather. And Heather is our first donor of the day that we're thanking.
Okay.
Thank you, Heather. Also... Please tell me that you didn't find that we have a Gether Kenyon somewhere.
No. I was just saying, okay, when I first Googled that and first asked you that, for some reason Google was saying, are you sure you're not looking for Gether? But I realized that was because of the way I had typed it. So no, I think you're good. I think you're good.
That was the one thing I was proud of related to this show, maybe in months. Allison Schuster of Arlington, Massachusetts, thank you for donating to TBTL. Megan Sutherland, Seattle, Washington. Thank you. Mandy Tucker of Graham, Washington. Dave Austin of Snohomish, Washington. He's a Snohomie. I guess at this point, I mean, is all that stuff in the public domain now that our friends Ron and Don have stopped doing the Ron and Don show on Cairo? Does that mean stop the show and four Snohomie on the floor? Do they own all that? What's the rule?
I'm not sure. I mean, it is, I think for now, while we're in this, in this phase, I think we can finally start using the Stop the Show drop, something that you and I have respectfully wanted to use for a long time, but never really did because, you know, property rights and everything. Who can own a Stop the Show? It's like owning the sky.
Mm-hmm. How do you catch a wave upon the sand?
Right.
I think is the question that Sandra Gilliam of Burton, Washington, Sandy in Burton, has once asked, maybe right before she donated to TBTL. Sandra, thank you so much for supporting the show. Also, thanks to Dave, Mandy, Megan, Allison, and Heather. Thank you for making TBTL possible. We can only do this 5 days a week as our job because we're able to get paid, and we get paid from donations from folks like the people we thank today. So thanks for making the show possible. We would not be here without you.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Howard Schultz is very likely going to announce he's running for president. He's got a book that comes out today, which I thought I had a moment of thinking, God, if this floating a presidential run is just to generate interest in his book, like, that is thirsty. That is something that I could see the current president doing.
That would be flipping it on its head. Yeah, I would be especially like if it was like some sort of a new Frappuccino drink. That would really be like, I'm going to run for president. But then, like, you're casually, like, in your announcement or in your 60 Minutes interview, just like sipping from a Starbucks cup.
Well, you know, I've told this story before, but, you know, I have a huge amount of resentment towards Howard Schultz because he bought the Seattle Sonics basketball team and then sold them to a group from Oklahoma City, which led to the team moving from Seattle to Oklahoma City, and that really, really crushed me. The Sonics were maybe the team I was most obsessed with as a kid, probably because I played basketball and was really into it, and so it just, I was very connected to the sport, and I loved them, and for them to leave was quite a bummer for me, and I had been practicing a speech in my head for a long time that I was going to give Howard Schultz if our paths ever crossed, which was not out of the realm of possibility because of, like, him being rich and me being the hired MC for many charity events where rich people show up. But as it happened, I ran into him, Carrie and I, we're walking in the
That's my wife.
Madison Park neighborhood of Seattle, walking Rudy, and saw a man and woman, and they had the most beautiful, I guess they were, We got a LiveWire show meeting tomorrow, Andrew. I really have to figure out how to turn those reminders off.
Can I just say, really quickly, a relatively
pleasant sound.
I love that sound. I just wish it meant that, like, suddenly, surprisingly, like, somebody from the TBTL gang is swinging by. Like, that's what that sounded like to me.
No, you know what it means? Double points for the rest of the show.
What does that mean? What do you mean double points?
I don't know. You know how, like, in Pop a Shot or, like, sometimes in a video game, if you're towards the end of something, it's like you're racking up the points at a different rate for whatever reason. I feel
and
like
the
that
music
activates.
Gets faster.
Yeah. So we run into this couple and their immaculately combed and brushed dogs, and we're chatting with them, and it takes me like 5 minutes to put it together that, ah, shit, this is Howard Schultz, because we've been talking about dogs. And he's also very fit right now, or at least in that moment he was. And he was like in exercise gear and a hat. So he just didn't look like how I perceived him to look. But I, of course, instead of giving him my speech, I wussed out and I just played along like, hey, we're also rich people who live in Madison Park. Like me passing with Howard Schultz, me seeming like a person who was in his world was more important to me in that moment than speaking truth to power. Also, I thought Kerry would have been not pleased if I made a scene there for no reason. What struck me about it, though, was he had a coffee cup from Starbucks because there was one right by there, and they had written Howard on the cup. And I thought that was just fascinating because clearly this is the Starbucks in the neighborhood where he lives or has a home, and he goes in, and he is, I assume, still the majority owner of the company, or maybe, I mean, it's publicly traded, so, but anyway, he's a pretty big wheel down at the Cracker Factory, and the fact that they're still writing Howard on his cup is, that's a bit of theater to me. Like, they know it's Howard Schultz, right? Like,
I think so, although I'm wondering here, people who work at Starbucks, who knows how aware they are of what Howard Schultz looks like. I speak as somebody who I am terrible with faces, man. He could have invited me over to dinner and I still wouldn't have recognized him. Like, and I, right. You know, I've seen him on TV. If you put him up there with a Chiron or with context clues, I get it. But like, if I'm just filling up coffee and I'm just doing order after order after order, and a guy like that comes in, like, he's not that striking of a person, you know? He's a white guy.
Right. I'm just thinking,
like, I don't know if I wouldn't recognize him. Maybe.
Well, would you recognize Mike Ressler if he came in for a cup of coffee?
Now I would, but can I be honest with you? And good morning, Mike. I assume you're listening to this. Mike Ressler, of course, our boss. For the first several years, or certainly a couple of years that we had this job at American Public Media, we had a different direct supervisor, and Mike was that person's boss. So for honestly the first 2 years of working here, if I ran into Mike, I don't know that I would have recognized him. We didn't meet him in person, or at least I didn't until much more recently. And some of his bosses, some of the head people at APM, like, I know their names, but if they really just, like, you know, walked into a coffee shop, I'm speaking for myself here, I would not necessarily recognize David Kansas if he walked in. You're really good at this, and I'm really bad at this. So I'm talking about face recognition.
I'm saying that I think that if I was the manager of the Starbucks where Howard Schultz is likely to come in on a pretty regular basis, I'm printing out a picture of him. I'm taping it up behind the counter. I'm saying, if you see this guy, really nail it on the coffee.
Yeah, that's true, like, especially if it's his neighborhood. That's
what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Is like,
yeah,
I feel
course,
like at that place, although maybe there's a more practical reason for writing his name on the cup, because otherwise how do the people know what coffee goes in what cup? Maybe it's not an indication of them pretending that they don't know who he is, and it's more just for their internal purposes. Anyway,
but I
did not.
How many crunk cups are you filling up at Starbucks?
Yeah,
that's why. It also, like, are you writing it in like indelible ink, or is that?
Did I mention he was with Lil Jon? I can't believe I really buried the lead. Howard Schultz, his wife, their immaculate dogs, and Lil Jon are in Madison Park in Seattle. They're probably friends, actually. Anyway, so I missed my chance to let him have it, and so now here we are. He is probably going to run for president as an independent. He's obviously very wealthy, and to be honest with you, a lot of my politics probably align with his politics. He's, you know, gotten some pushback because of trying to say, like, let's not bring guns into Starbucks. Could we not do that? And other things. I mean, and Starbucks has had some really bad moments in terms of, you know, incidents involving people of color. And who knows if their attempts at ameliorating that were effective or not, or if they went far enough, et cetera, et cetera. We got an update from DFTB, who was in one of those meetings.
Yeah.
But anyway, if Howard Schultz were not the person who lost my basketball team, I'd probably give some consideration to maybe supporting him, not knowing 100% what his politics are as of yet. But I can't see myself ever voting for him because of this basketball thing, which is – I understand how ridiculous that is. It's like the fate of the nation, like, rests potentially upon this whole thing. And I'm like, but I can't believe what you did with the basketball team. Like, is that mm-hmm. – and I feel like that's the – he is a very reviled figure, at least among a certain group of people in Seattle. I think that's so interesting. Like, he doesn't have, as you would say, he doesn't have a home court advantage in Seattle over this.
Yeah, no. This one I'm really struggling with because I don't want to get into the politics of it. That's not why we're here, and that's not interesting. But for me, like, I'm not tempted by his candidacy at all anyway, and I'd probably prefer okay. that he just didn't run as an independent. So, like, it's hard for me. And then so I spent this morning trying to think of, like, parallels. Okay, well, what if – okay, first of all, also, I'm not an NBA fan. I would prefer – that the Sonics were still here because a lot of my friends like you are fans, were fans, and shouldn't have had to go through that. I think it's good for the city. I would prefer that the team was here and that it had never left, certainly. But it's not like when, you know, it's not like the Browns leaving town. And even when, I'll be honest, even when the Browns left Cleveland, generally speaking, I was against it, but I also didn't really care that much as a punk teenager who didn't care about sports. So, you know, I was trying to think of, like, okay, what
slash
if I love
had your priorities straight.
Yeah. Called,
you know what I mean?
Listening to Jefferson Airplane.
No, but I mean that seriously. The funny part is I say this as a person who spends a lot of his time thinking about football. The priority that I put on, like, professional sports, particularly football, a bad sport, is messed up. Like, I wish – like, you actually probably had it more right when you were a kid and didn't care.
Yeah, but – well, not to get in this whole conversation. There are people who are kind of like, hey, I understand sports and it's not just for me. And then there are the other people who it's kind of like, oh, I hate sports. I'm turning off Twitter for a day because everybody's talking about sports. And it's kind of like this let me put it this way. I'm just going to – alienate all the listeners or as much as possible today, but, like, I have to really stop myself because I don't like soccer, really. I don't dislike the game. I just don't really care about it. But then I see, like, what I think of as kind of soccer culture here in the Pacific Northwest, and it's certainly not for me. But I will sometimes get real, like, kind of eye-rolly, like, classic 1993 Andy on it. You know, just like, oh, God, soccer fans. Ugh, who cares? I'm over it. It's like, why would you do that, Andrew? You acted that way about all kinds of sports when you were young that you now really love. And there's no – you know, I'm like a look away from liking soccer instead of football. You know what I mean? The reason I watch the things I watch has a lot to do with – the community that I've surrounded myself with, right? And so it's very possible that someday I would become a huge soccer fan, or I could have in the past. So I think that it wasn't kind of like, oh, I have my priorities straight. I'm really just trying to keep an eye on what's going on in world affairs. I'm also really interested in learning the piccolo. And I just don't have time to really get into football right now. I was very much an eye-rolly teenager who was just kind of like, ugh,
right.
That is not my brand.
Your personality type, it was, as they say a lot now, I saw this on probably Twitter this weekend that said, saying things are not a personality type is not a personality type.
Although I've been trying.
I know, right? I got 42 years in on this. Don't stop me now. But, like, I was like, it's like a fair point because, of course, it has flared up lately and I've used it and I think it's actually a kind of an interesting way to put it of, like, you know, saying, like, I love bacon is not – like, loving bacon is not a personality type or whatever. Mm-hmm. Loving whiskey is not a personality type. But then, of course, saying things are not a personality type also probably isn't a personality type.
Right,
in fairness.
Right.
But because this is also the day that Howard Schultz releases his book, I guess, there's – like, the Seattle Times got some – an advanced copy of it. And he he sort of, I guess, kind of apologizes for losing the Sonics.
Oh, because, yeah.
And I know this is sort of boring to the listeners, but just, again, try to forget that it's a basketball team just think of it as any kind of, I don't know, thing you, a beloved thing in your town that somebody fumbled away. He says that, first of all, he says that, you know, it was a hurt on the city of Seattle that he'll never be able to really undo, which I guess I appreciate him saying that. But the gist of it is he still is acting like he sold the team to these, because what basically had happened, the really, the kind of quick version of things is, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, had hosted an NBA team for a season, and that was the New Orleans team, because the New Orleans team was displaced by Hurricane Katrina. And what was surprising to everybody was that the Oklahoma City version of the team, which was called the Nooch, the New Orleans Oklahoma City, were they the Pelicans then or something? Anyway, no, they weren't the Pelicans. They were the... Point being, they sold out all their games, and everybody was like, oh my God, Oklahoma City can maintain an NBA basketball team. And of course, everybody in Oklahoma City was like, hell to the yeah. And so then Howard Schultz ends up, and then that team goes back to New Orleans, and then Oklahoma City doesn't have a team. And then Howard Schultz, of all the cities for him to sell the Sonics to, he sells them to two fellas from Oklahoma City. And he argues that he thought that they would be able to get a stadium deal done in Seattle because Seattle would be more worried about the team going to Oklahoma City. I mean, that's the most tortured explanation for why you would sell the team to a city that was literally like had a cartoon bib tied around their neck, a knife and fork, and was drooling over getting an NBA team.
Right.
So sorry for that digression. But the point is, I don't think Howard Schultz is dumb. I don't think he got where he is by being dumb. I mean, he got more money for selling the team to the group that ended up taking them out of the city. And again, I don't think that we're going to be in a realistic situation where it's Howard Schultz gets the nomination, although I didn't think that the current president was going to get the nomination. So it shows you what I know. And I guess if it was like Howard Schultz against the current guy, I'm going to vote Howard Schultz. But
oh God, yeah.
But if it's anywhere close to anybody else, and there it's a coin toss, the fact that this guy because here's the other thing I was thinking, and now this is just going towards sports town, Andrew, because I have been like kind of playing more basketball of late, and because the Huskies are looking really good this season, the men's basketball team of the University of Washington. Do you know Genevieve and I are going to go to the game on Wednesday?
Oh yeah, you have a date. You have a date with Genevieve. You sent a text to Genevieve that said, "Hey, do you want to go watch a basketball game and Walsh too?" I guess that's
I said Walsh too if he's interested. Right. I just didn't want you to feel pressure. I know that Vives, as an employee of that fine institution, and is a booster as am I, as a graduate of the UW. I just thought it seemed more like Genevieve's speed, to be totally honest.
I actually, this is the truth of the matter. When I was there when Genevieve got that text, and I said, like, I was like, oh, yeah, basketball game sounds fun. I haven't been to a lot. I've been to a few Storm games, and it was fun. But you know what? I'm actually a fan. This is going to sound weird and maybe too personal. But no, I like the fact that you guys are going to go and just hang out by yourselves, because I think sometimes people get caught in a trap of like kind of couples or who are the friends in the couples or whatever. And I always like, I think that people should hang out independently as well. That maybe sounds condescending, but I was kind of like, oh no, you guys should go and have a good time. It's not about me not wanting to go basketball. That actually sounds fun and I would go in the future, but I think you guys will have a really good time too and get to just kind of chill out. Sometimes dynamics are different with three people instead of two.
Well, I'm excited to go, but I've been just really in a basketball kind of, and then watching some NBA games, which I had really sworn off. And here's where I'm going with this, Andrew, and this is where it's going to get overly sporty. I thought to myself, I became especially enraged with Howard Schultz over the weekend, and the reason was because Seattle doesn't have an NBA team. And I thought to myself, the NBA, which of course has its own flaws, is so much more defensible. Defensible or defendable?
Defensible.
I can defend the NBA, the NBA's existence, much easier than I can the NFL's existence. Mm-hmm. There's no evidence of the NBA trying to suppress data that reflects poorly on traumatic brain injury as a result of playing in the NBA. Like, you know, you might have some sore joints, and again, I'm not saying everything about the NBA is peachy keen, but it is a much, much different culture than the NFL, where players are generally allowed to do their thing and be themselves. That was not always the case. David Stern had a period of time where he was trying to, I think, control the behaviors of the players, having to do with, like, you couldn't chew gum during the national anthem and stuff like that. Mercifully, I think they've moved past most of that. And anyway, I was just sitting there, like, I was actually, you know what I was doing? I was literally folding laundry. Mm-hmm. It was when I have some of my most deep thoughts. And I was thinking about Howard Schultz, and I was like, F you, buddy, for – because – I would be – because I the NBA, I think, is an overall pretty – other than breaking my heart, it's a much – again, it's just a much better situation than the NFL. And I am very locked into the NFL and have very complex feelings about that. So anyway, I don't know. I just was feeling especially frustrated that this guy for ruining this thing that will – did I tell you about this conversation? This sounds like I'm trying to name drop or something, but I was at some fancy event and I'm talking to a guy – about somehow the Sonics come up and he goes, yeah, I got to be honest with you. You're not getting the Sonics back. And I was thinking, really, dude? Like, what do you know? And it turned out he was the general manager of the Portland Trailblazers. And he wasn't saying it to be mean. He was like a nice guy. He was like just being realistic. And he was like,
he's in on meetings.
Yeah, he's like, if there's a guy who would know about that, it'd be this guy. And I was just like, so it wasn't just some drunk at the bar. When was that? That was... I don't know, 8 months ago or something.
Oh, okay. Wow. So after all of this, the current machinations were already in progress, and this guy said, yeah, you're not getting an NBA team. That's interesting.
Yeah, he was like, he was very, and again, he wasn't trying to be a jerk about it. He was just trying to manage my expectations. So that's a long, complicated way of saying I'm still mad at Howard Schultz, and I'm hoping he doesn't – here's what it is. I hope he doesn't advance to an important point in the election where I have to actually decide if my grudge is strong enough to – because, again, if it's like the fate of the nation, if it's him versus the current guy, I'm going to vote for him. But I don't want to have to make that decision. I'm still mad at myself over missing my chance to blow when I ran into him in Madison Park.
Right, yeah. Maybe you'll introduce him at some fundraising event.
At this point, I think I would just, I mean, I don't know. Should I just leave it alone? Like, if, because again, it's not out of the realm of possibility that I would cross paths with him. But like, what am I going to say to him? It would, at that point, I guess it would be a funny story for the show and it would be moderately cathartic to me. But you know what actually happened was I found him very pleasant to talk to. That was the messed up part. When I was briefly chatting with him, I was like, yeah, he's actually seems like a relatively nice guy. So that also kind of screwed with my determination to let him have it.
Yeah, at this point, it's not going to change the world in any good way. It's not going to change his perspective. He's heard it. It's not really probably going to make you feel better getting it off your chest. Maybe it will, but I think the chances are it'll end up being a moment that you're kind of like, you wish you could have over. However, if he splits the Democratic ticket and helps Trump get into office for a second time, you and I together can confront him. We will find him, we will confront him, and we will give him an earful. How about that?
Deal. I like it. This was a story you sent me, Andrew, from the Washington Post. What's that flash near the roadside porta potty? It's a speed camera. Drivers in the Washington, D.C. area have been frustrated. This is actually in Maryland, of course, but they've been frustrated by a kind of a, I think you'd call it a camera trap on Interstate 270 in Maryland. A gray and blue Portageon on the southbound shoulder shields a silver SUV that has a camera attached to its front grille. Maryland highway officials say they're trying to keep motorists to a safe speed through the work zone for an interchange that's being built. But basically what you have is like a speed camera that's attached to the front of a police car, and that whole apparatus is hiding behind a porta potty. It's a pretty elaborate setup here.
Yeah, at first I was a little confused by this because I thought it was the glancing quickly at the picture, you see this device on the front of a car, a police car. So for some reason, I was getting speed camera confused with radar detector, and I was thinking that there was still some human interaction. Like, basically, you have a police car hiding behind this obstruction, in this case, a porta potty, and then if they catch you speeding by, zoop, they'll pull out and they'll get you. But obviously, no, this is a speed camera. So this is like an automated system. You can't see this thing, and it's hiding behind the porta potty. And then you don't even know that you get caught until you get a ticket, I assume, in your mail in a week or something. And here's the thing. I want to set up our dynamic on this, because in the past we've talked about this. And generally speaking, I don't go in for this idea that, like, well, law enforcement has to be kind of sporting about it when it comes to issuing tickets. Like, I have zero, like literally zero problem with red light cameras. Don't really have problems with cameras enforcing the law at all. I just sort of think, well, either you follow the law, or if not, law enforcement has every right to try to catch you breaking the law and issue justice. But I would say, you know, there's a quote in this article from somebody that I'm going to paraphrase, which is like, it's not about being sporting. It's just that if you really want to have an impact, if your goal is really to get people to drive more safely, then you should put these things out in a position where they're very clearly there. And then people will see them and they'll have this moment of, oh, wow, I'm going pretty quickly. I don't want that camera to get me, so I'm going to slow down. Like, it should be that kind of enforcement or reinforcement. Hiding this thing and then having somebody drive by and they don't even know they got a ticket until later, that's not a clear path to actual changing of behavior. Does that make sense?
Right.
I feel like I've been babbling for a while.
It does, and that's what frustrates me is with a lot of these cameras is that they're not I don't think that they're trying to change your behavior. They are trying to generate money. And that is frustrating to me, because exactly what you said and what somebody in the article said. Like, if you want people to start slowing down, put the camera in a place where people can see it in front of the porta potty, so as people approach it, they're like, "Oh, let me slow down." Otherwise you're not changing anyone's behavior. You're just issuing tickets. And this happens a lot. We used to talk about this on Ross and Burbank a lot, because they'd set these cameras up like in a school zone, allegedly to slow people down in the school zone. But they would just print money. It'd be like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of tickets in like a week. And it was kind of like, what are you really trying to do here? And I mean, obviously we need – I'm a bleeding heart liberal. Like, I understand that we need money to run things. But I also think that those tickets are – that's not the most equal way, because somebody who's driving a stone-cold beater just trying to go to their minimum wage job is equally likely to get a ticket as somebody driving a really fancy car. And I don't like that as a way of developing resources for a municipality either. I'm not trying to, like, you know, I don't want anyone to cry me a river, but I have definitely had times in my life, particularly when I was in college and stuff, where I had no money and I had tons of tickets. Now, granted, I got those tickets, you know, myself through bad planning, I guess. But I also had jobs that didn't pay very much money that were in areas where you couldn't really park. And I lived in an apartment that had no parking. I didn't have the money to pay for parking. So I was just in a constant state of moving my – and I needed the car because I had a kid. Again, this is all stuff I brought upon myself. But I think I have a pretty big soft spot for how shitty it is to get a ticket when you just have no money. And then the ticket goes to collections, and then your life gets – you know, you get the boot on your car, and then you can't go to your job because you can't drive your car. And then, you know, it just – I just don't think it's the greatest way to generate money for your local town.
Yeah, and again, even for the school zone example that you're talking about, like, because I think that maybe you and I even talked about it then, maybe on air, maybe off, maybe debated on Ross and Burbank, I don't know. Like, generally speaking, if there are a bunch of flashing lights that make it very clear, like, this is a school zone and it's enforced by cameras, then I am 100% fine with that, because it should be, like, letting people know. But if you're sneaking it behind something and it's kind of like, oh, it's literally a speed trap, like, they're going to get you where the zone officially begins but the lights don't flash for another 100 yards or something like that, that's just, yeah, that is not how I think the law is supposed to work. I would be if somebody wanted to create a road. Actually, this leads me to something that would be relevant to your interests. I was going to say, if somebody wanted to create a road and just said, yeah, guess what? This is a new high-tech road. Like, there's a speed limit. If you go over the speed limit, the whole thing is monitored by electronics. If you go over the speed limit by a certain amount, you're going to get a ticket. Like, I'd be like, okay, fine. And I'm just going to be very careful to not go over the limit on that road. And I think that'd be totally fine. But the thing is, it can't be tricking you into breaking the law, or maybe that's a bad way of putting that, but just make it clear what the rules are. This is what I was going to tell you, though, Luke. I got something in my car now that is driving me nuts. We switched insurance recently, and we have Progressive now. And Genevieve said Progressive has this safe driver thing, which you might have seen commercials for. Flo will hawk these from time to time. It's a device that you literally plug into your car underneath the steering wheel, and it monitors your driving for 6 months. And they say that it's not supposed to really affect – it's supposed to only be able to save you money by agreeing to do this. But it's become a behavior modification device because I noticed I'm driving it, and every now and then, driving in the city, somebody will do a stop short in front of you, or there will be an unexpected crosswalk and you have to stop quickly, and the son of a gun is beeping at me every time I kind of stop short. I'm like, what's going on? This thing is not supposed to be monitoring my behavior other than maybe what time I'm driving and like how much we're using the car. And I did some looking into it. Apparently, it's not recording any negative behavior like speeding or acceleration, but for some reason, it decided, or they decided, that a good way to figure out if somebody is a risky driver or not is to look at sudden deceleration. And if you decelerate at a certain amount, then it's going to beep at you, and that's all being recorded. And like a bunch of people are saying, like, if you live in the city, this is terrible, because city driving means stopping a lot and having to stop short. It doesn't mean you're a risky driver. But we have not finished our 6 month trial with this yet, but some people are saying, yeah, if you keep on stopping short, it's going to label you as a risky driver, and actually your premiums will go up. I am waiting to see if that's going to happen to us. But man, do I feel like Big Brother is in my car. I feel watched all the time.
That is weird. I mean, I'd seen the ads for it, but I'd never, I guess, actually put it together. What is it actually plugging into? A USB port or something?
I don't know the proper name for it. I'm sure we could look it up now, and I know there are people in the audience who know, but there's a certain kind. It's like a data port. It's not as big. It's bigger than a USB, but picture, like, I don't know, almost like the big cables that you used to plug into a monitor for a computer.
Yeah.
If you had like a desktop computer, only maybe, let's say, like three times the size of it. But then the device is, you know, maybe about the size of an egg or something, and that's the connector, and you just like plug it up in there.
Yeah, that's a very – I'm surprised that that system is still in place, because – and I'd say this is a person whose house is full of listening devices that I paid Jeff mm-hmm. Bezos for. You know,
yeah.
So like, I'm like, you know, I've fully turned myself over to the being monitored by big whomever. But that actually would feel like a bridge too far to me. And I mean, I'd just say call Kevin O'Brien at Liberty Mutual. That'd just be me.
Yeah.
That's how I would handle that situation. But also, yeah, that would really stress me out, because in other words, you're saying that if it deems you to be too risky at the end of this time, your premium would go up.
I am a little murky about this, because supposedly they say that is not the purpose of these things, and all
what
it will do
be?
Is Genevieve has explained it to me. It's not to lower our rates, but it will if we do it for 6 months and then we do need insurance for whatever reason, it'll affect our deductible in a good way because we agreed to use this program. But people online are saying, yeah, they say that it can't affect you, but if they do determine that you're a risky driver, keep an eye on your rates, because they will go up over time. And I don't know. Some of the things I was reading were a little bit conspiratorial, so I will definitely – we probably had it in the car for about 3 months now, so I will definitely let you know what happens once we send this thing in, because I feel a little bit nervous about sending it in now, because it beeps at me almost every time I drive. Not almost every time, but 50% of the time. But again, I don't think I'm a risky driver. I'm leaving enough space. Even it's funny, because at one point I remember I was driving to Cairo to do a fill-in shift there, and that's about, I don't know, it's about 2 miles away from me, basically on the same road. I don't even have to really turn off the road I live on to get there. So it's a very straight, short drive, but it's very trafficky. It's very stop and go. There's various, I think, people getting on the highway in certain places, and it's just a weird thoroughfare, if that's the right word. And I remember driving to Cairo one day thinking, like, I'm not going to let this – I'm both thinking I resent this little device for getting in my head so much, but also I don't want this son of a gun to beep at me again, so I'm leaving extra space. You win, progressive, in front of this car. I'm literally in the middle of this thought of how much I hate progressive right now, yet I should, you know, back off as much as I can any car in front of me. As I'm having that thought, the car in front of me slams on their brakes because somebody is crossing the street in a marked crosswalk, but it doesn't have lights or whatever, and this is kind of the pre-dawn hours, and so they suddenly notice, oh, somebody's trying to walk across the street. I'm going to stop and be polite. I agree with the car's decision in front of me. I would have done it too, but it meant that I also had to stop pretty quickly, and then this thing goes beep, beep, beep while I'm having the thought how much I hate this thing.
You're getting hollered at digitally, which is your least favorite experience.
Thank you. That's exactly what's happening.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
Any interesting emails on this Monday?
Yeah, I think so. We were talking about left versus right a couple of weeks ago on the show now, how you kind of remember your left versus your right. And we got an email from listener Heidi, who is our Latin expert on the show, explaining that in, I guess, ancient cultures, I guess in Latin, left means sinister, right? Like the Romans attached like sinister feelings with the left-hand side. And we got a note from one of our younger listeners, Hannah, who's in high school, and she says, I heard you discussing how left is often looked upon as the devil or unlucky. I happen to be left-handed, and it's crazy how much people choose to believe in these silly superstitions. I've had people tell me that, quote, I'm the sign of the devil. Yesterday, I picked up my pencil, and someone next to me said, uh-oh, demon. I'm in high school now, so I guess I'm writing by hand more often than the average person, but I see these interactions a lot. When I was first learning to write, we use chalkboards, and all the chalk would get smudged by my left hand. My teacher told me, well, you're unlucky because left is the sign of a demon. Turns out chalk is just smudgy, and I was six. There were no demons involved. I find it pretty funny that all this matters so much. Happily, it seems I've turned out not to be a demon, but just a normal person who uses their left hand. Just thought I'd let you know. Power out. Love the show. Hannah in Massachusetts. Can people... Making fun of left-handed people is not a personality type. How about that? Can people, if nothing else, just like, if I didn't realize that if you're left-handed, you're hearing this shit all the time.
This is a silly comparison because it's not the same at all, but I guess it's on the subject of like, you don't realize how common something is until you're kind of in that world of people. When I was taking the ferry out to Lopez Island, the guy who was working in the little ticket booth was named Luke. He had a name tag on, and I said, hey, good name, solid name. I go, that's my name. And he goes, you get a lot of Luke, I'm your father? I was like, yep, pretty daily experience. Yeah. And we kind of compared notes right, on the go-tos around being named Luke. And that's – no one's calling me a demon, and there are much – I don't feel oppressed at all as a person named Luke. But it was kind of this weird bonding moment of being like, yeah. Get that a lot, huh? Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Like, I can only imagine as a left-handed. Because, like, since I'm not left-handed, I've never... It would be shocking to me that anyone would associate it with anything demonic. And who knows? Maybe the teacher was trying to make a joke and it didn't land right. But, like, that's...
I'm sure, yeah.
I would say not a thing you should say to a six-year-old student.
I agree. And, again, it's one of those things I'm sure that everybody who's making this joke thinks that they're just, like... That they're not really trying to give somebody a complex, that they're just joking around. But when you're a kid and you just keep hearing that, I mean, Hannah doesn't seem super bothered by it other than a little annoyed, but like, not even because it's necessarily going to give somebody a complex, but it's just annoying after a while. It's like me, like, I have to sometimes, you know, I know that if somebody at a grocery store who's checking me out, not checking me out, nobody checks me out at the grocery store, but if there's a cashier who's checking my groceries out at the grocery store, if something does not have a price sticker on it, you're not supposed to say, oh, that means it's free. Because they hear that every 4 minutes in their job. Just resist the urge. And I do have to actually resist the urge.
I wrote this on Twitter and then probably deleted it at some point because it was part of that, I guess, meme you would call it, where it was like somebody says something and then there's like, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the response. And my joke was around the idea and the memory that when I was a valet parking cars, it was 30 times a night, some person would come out. It's almost always a guy. In fact, I can't remember it not being a guy. And that would be like, it's the Ferrari. It's the Lamborghini.
Right. Exactly.
Like,
right.
It was always a guy. It always seemed like it was a guy who would had just started dating again after a recent divorce. And he would like had taken his new lady friend to this chowder house where I was a valet. And like I was like, oh, you know, that when you work at a job where there's an obvious low-hanging fruit joke, you realize how often people will take the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah. Hey, can I read one more from you? I'm so happy to see that we got an email from one of our favorite emailers who burst onto the scene, I'm going to say, about a year or two ago. And he would send us some great emails, and then he went quiet for a while. And I'm talking about none other than John in Little Rock. Do you remember John in Little Rock? Love this guy.
Yeah.
He's back at us. He says, Andrew's story about photographing rude parking behavior brought to mind an incident from several years ago. How many years ago? I was using a 35mm film camera. I teach weed identification and often carry a camera because weeds are everywhere. Less about that later. The location...
I've never heard that. That's great.
And he's right, by the way. There's less about that later. The location was the parking lot of a furniture warehouse in Omaha, Nebraska. I was waiting for the furniture guys to bring a bed out to my truck, so I decided to use my time wisely and take a few pictures of weeds growing in the parking lot. Out of nowhere, an irate young man runs up and gets in my face demanding to know if I'm taking pictures of his car. I was taken off guard, to say the least. I explained that I was photographing weeds. However, no one ever believes that story. He persisted, the theme being that I was taking pictures of these cars so my gang could decide which ones to steal later. After he failed to buy the weed photography explanation, I resorted to another tack, telling him in a less friendly tone, "You are crazy, get the F away from me," and this seemed to work. John in Little Rock.
Wow. People don't like you taking pictures of them. Although I don't...
Or their cars. Maybe, I think people... Yeah, I think cars are kind of an extension of us in a way. Didn't you say one time, or maybe I told you that I'd come out to my car and somebody had taken my side view mirror and folded it inward for me? I mean, the car is supposed to do that. It's fine. But I think I remember mentioning that to you and you were like, what the F? You don't touch another person's car.
But I don't know if it's just because of having these kinds of jobs where it's not uncommon, I guess, you know, to be photographed. I don't think I'm George Clooney or something, but like, I don't feel like I would have that reaction. If I was getting out of my car and someone was taking a picture of me, I mean, I would be curious about it. And of course, with my bloated ego, it would be like, another TBTL10. And they'd be like, no, this is for a paternity suit. Are you Luke Burbank?
Yes.
You're being served.
Yes, exactly.
Like, I would think it was some kind of fan behavior. They'd be like, no, this is... But either way, I don't think... I wouldn't be suspicious. Like, what are you going to do with that picture? Again, maybe it's just because we 5 days a week record ourselves and beg people to listen. So maybe I'm just wired differently. But I don't understand people being mad about someone taking a picture of them. If you're on the street where you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy, I might be curious but not angry, I think.
But... So again, I didn't detail the whole story here because listeners know, and I told it last week. But there was somebody who I perceived to be parked very rudely in the Whole Foods parking lot, and I took a picture of the car. And I don't know why I don't post things to publicly shame people, but
car.
I just exactly. And the guy caught me taking a picture of his car, and he was upset about it. And I gotta say, whether I'm parked politely or not, if I come out of the grocery store and I see somebody taking specific interest in my car and taking photos of it, I want to know what's up. Like, wouldn't you feel a little bit – you have your new Tiguan. Like, somebody comes out – you come out of the store and, like, people are standing around it taking a photo, or just one somewhat sketchy-looking bearded guy is. Like, you probably want to know what's going on there.
Well, I would be curious, but again, my therapist – tries to remind me come at things with a, I forget the exact term, it's something like a bemused curiosity or something. Like,
oh, nice.
I don't think that my reaction would be hard-edged and like, what are you doing? My reaction, I think, would be like, oh, hey, what's going on? Like, I would be genuinely curious. Do you like the car? Are you taking a picture because it's a sweet ride? Are you taking a picture because it's the sweet ride of noted micro-celebrity Luke Burbank? Are you taking a picture of the sweet ride because of how it's parked, which is in the wrong. I just, for whatever reason, my gut tells me I wouldn't be mad about it. I might be curious, but not mad.
Would it be different if you were parked someplace that was like a flagrant place you're not supposed to park? Maybe you're like saying, hey, listen, I'm just going to go in here for a quick cup of coffee. It doesn't matter if I park in this no parking lane for a second, or I'm just going to leave my car in the bus lane for 1 second. I know I can beat the bus. I'm sure you've done something like that before. Maybe not the bus
lane. How dare you? And probably.
But, yes.
Well, here's
you come out
I
of the shop
like my,
and you... You know,
well,
you
my reaction then, I think, would be embarrassment because I would know that I was busted. But again, for somebody who's had many a public meltdown slash confrontation with someone, I don't know why it is I think I would be so sort of zen-like in this. But I kind of feel like if I parked somewhere where I wasn't supposed to park and I was running in and I came out and someone was taking a picture, I kind of think – and I know I've told many stories that belie this on the show, but I kind of think my reaction would be like, you got me or something, as opposed to like if I was caught red-handed, I don't understand how I would logically be able to be mad at them when all they were doing was documenting that I had parked in the, you know, like a well, I'll tell you what, and I can honestly say for all my sketchy behavior, I don't think I can remember ever parking in a disabled spot. That for some reason is a big one with me. It's just like I feel like this is what separates us from like animals, is that we take care, we try to, at least allegedly, we try to take care of people who are facing unique challenges. It's not just the law of the jungle. We don't just leave people out at the whims of life. And part of that is I got to park 5 feet further away from the Toys R Us. Fine, I'll live. So that's what I try to remind myself, because I'm also somebody who just hates being delayed or waiting or being far away from something when there's like three or four perfectly good spots right there. So I don't think I've ever parked in a disabled spot. But were I to come out and have someone taking a picture of me in a disabled spot, that would be the worst case scenario, because I'd be being put on blast. But I even just think then maybe I'd beg them not to use the picture. I don't know what I would do.
You just slip into a very significant limp. You'd just be like, you would just go into play acting immediately.
Have we ever... I don't think – I mean, I know it's come up on the show before, but I can't remember the specifics of the stories. Have you ever or have I ever confronted someone that we thought was misusing that privilege?
There was that notoriously hard-to-park-in parking lot outside of the old QFC that I used to go to. There was an overflow lot, which was easy to park in, but everybody wanted the ones right by the door. But there was a very limited space, and people would sometimes just like – do that thing where if they see somebody is just coming out of the grocery store with their groceries, oh, I think this person is going to be leaving pretty soon. Like, people would just stop and block traffic, back out onto the street, just waiting for somebody to move their car so one of these spaces will free up. And that used to infuriate me to, like, no end. But then one time I saw some guy doing that, and then he waited and he waited and he waited and nothing opened up. I'm getting frustrated behind him. And then he decides I'm just going to park in one of these handicap spots, which is just, it's not really handicap, right? I always say that and I always forget. What is the actual term? The disabled parking? I don't know.
I think disabled is disabled the current terminology? I don't think handicapped is the preferred nomenclature, dude.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Anyway, this fella just – I mean, because I saw the process. He wanted a spot.
Right.
He wanted a spot. Didn't get one. Decides, no, I'm not going to park across the street. Which, by the way, across the street is not hard. There's a crosswalk. There are these things called grocery carts where you can put all of your groceries in it and push it across the street to the car. It's all fine. But he decided, no, I'm just going to take one of these spots. And he just like rolled into it. And he's like this really young, strapping young man. Then he goes in. And this has nothing to do with anything. It doesn't matter. But it's clear he's like getting ready for a party. It was like a Friday or Saturday night. And so I keep on seeing him in the in the grocery store. And he's just his grocery cart is filled with nothing but booze. And I think he even did a thing. Could I just be exaggerating now? He might have even done the thing where he got in line behind me and then left his cart there and then ran and got one more thing, which to me, that is the number one sin of the grocery store. You do not do that. Your cart is not a proxy for you. It cannot wait in line for you. And I think I did – at first I said something to the cashier, and then the guy got behind me, and I think I did say something to him like, "You, oh, I think you accidentally – parked in the wrong spot or something. And I don't know. It was just it was a real passive aggressive, like, I kind of confronted him, but I was also just kind of like snarky about it. And I did not make the world a better place that day.
No good comes from doing this an hour and a half into the show. But I wonder about, and I don't want you, well, that's not true. I think if you psychoanalyze me or try to get into my systems and how they're working or not working, I'll probably have a bad feeling from that. So I shouldn't be doing that with you. But I think that there's a possible issue with your approach to those situations sometimes is that somebody like me, who is generally just narcissistically bull charging my way, RIP Newman, bull charging my way through the world, is that kind of passive aggressive thing is assumes that I have an inner voice that actually cares about other people. You know what I mean? So if you say oh, I think you parked in the wrong place, I will take that. Somebody like me will be like, oh, I must have, like, I won't read the subtlety of it and be like,
oh, right.
I won't be,
oh, I see what you're
going saying. Home later being like, oh man, I shouldn't have done that. I'll be like, oh good, they thought it was an accident. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, I see what you mean. I think that he definitely got it in this case, but your broader point is not lost on me, because I think that I'm trying to be like real, I don't know what I think. Like, I don't know what I should have said instead, but I know that I said something that I thought would be like kind of cutting. I don't think I said you parked in the wrong spot. I'm like, oh, notice that you parked in a disabled spot or something like that. He's like, yeah, uh-huh. What of it? Or something. But like, you're right. Like, what would be better if I really wanted to get my point across would be like, hey, listen,
man,
those spots are like reserved for a reason. Like, you can't just park. Like, if I had said something maybe more straightforward like that, instead of like some sort of an eye rolly snarky comment in passing, and then I try to get out of there as fast as possible.
I mean, I'm not trying to criticize. What you're doing is still better than what I've done many times, which is an actual confrontation or some other weird, bizarre behavior. But like, I'm just saying, it's funny because sometimes I think it's predicated on the idea that their brains work.
Sure.
Maybe similar to yours. And as a person whose brain is a lot of times different than yours, I would just be like, if you said something snarky to me, like, hey, he's a real polite car, I might be like, dude loves my car.
Yeah,
this man loves cars. Like, I wouldn't get the subtlety of it.
Yeah, in that last instance, that polite car situation, which is the more recent one in the Whole Foods parking lot, where I was taking a picture of the guy's car that was parked across three lanes. I think you're right. It did because he said, "Why are you taking a picture of my car?" And I said, "Because I really like it. It looks like a real polite car." God, I'm an idiot. But. Then I kept walking.
When are we going to start seeing real polite car bumper stickers around Seattle?
Hashtag real polite car. But I do think then I started walking away, if you'll recall, and it was like beat.
Oh, it got to him.
Beat. And then he's like, hey, wait a second. Or, hey, you know, he tried to call me back. And so I do think that it did take a moment. I mean, I think he got there. And maybe that's what
you're right
want,
about
too,
that.
Like to get in their head a little bit.
Yeah. Have you been back to that Whole Foods?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously take a different walking route to get there. I go there almost once a day for something. There's almost always something that you need, whether it's I'll run over there for a quick salad bar lunch or, you know, just grab a thing of water or something. But, I am much more conscious or self-conscious about walking through that construction area because I did see his car again, like I told you, that second day. So I know that he is somebody who is clearly working on a project there.
Pumping iron, getting stronger.
Yeah, right.
Sharpening various tools.
Exactly.
It was a real weekend of firsts for me. One, like I said, I went and saw an animated movie by myself, a superhero movie at that. And two, I ordered a vegan sandwich at the Whole Foods here in Bellingham, and it was so good.
Well, a vegan, what was on it?
It had field roast, which is like a fake kind of fake meat product that's made in Seattle, actually, not very far at all from where you live. In fact, very close to where you used to live in Wallingford, but it's called the vegan voodoo, which is a horrible name, and it's like on a ciabatta roll, and it had some olives on it and some lettuce and some kind of probably fake mayo, I guess, although maybe you could pass on that as a non-mayo person. But it was vegan, so whatever kind of mayo it was, it didn't have the normal stuff in it. And this kind of fake meat thing, which was pretty subtle, actually. Anyway, it was so good. It was like in the top like 15 sandwiches I've ever had in my life.
Really?
And it was a vegan sandwich. And I got it on Saturday, and it was so good that I got it on Sunday. And when Rudy and I went on our big hike, I sat up in our special private hiding place away from everybody else, the maddening crowds, as I said, and ate this vegan sandwich. It was so good. Two things I never thought I would do: see a Spider-Man movie by myself and eat a vegan sandwich voluntarily. And I found them both to be quite pleasurable.
Hey, tomorrow I did something this weekend that was one of the grossest and most satisfying things I've ever done. It had nothing to do with the human body. I would like to tell you about it maybe tomorrow on the show.
Okay.
Take a note.
Wow, can it be tomorrow already? I want to hear this story.
And that's how you keep the listeners, Luke. I hope you're taking notes.
I am. I don't actually take notes. Yeah, no, so I also never have a good idea for a show title, and I'm hoping you do.
I know.
Do you have an idea for a show title?
All I wrote down was when you're talking about Spider-Man, you said more than a movie, so I thought we could call the show More Than a Movie to Me, based on the popular song More Than a Woman.
I'm down for that.
Should we go out with that song?
Yeah, why not? Bee Gees. That's another. Camaro Kev can really give you chapter and verse on the Bee Gees.
Yeah, he got into that a little bit when we were doing our holiday shows.
Yeah, that's a kind of interesting story of that family band. So, all right, we'll go out with some Bee Gees. We will say goodbye to everybody for today, but of course, we'll be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, go Mariners, go Browns, go eat a bagel. Don't go chasing waterfalls. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.